Now, grateful for the light of day, Bruce sat up straighter and negotiated a set of curves. Both villages marked on the penciled map were now behind him. The monastery was close. He kept the window of his small rental car wide open, his speed slow, in case he heard another vehicle approach. Around the second curve, he saw her walking on the verge. She stopped when his car appeared. Against the backdrop of a stand of cedars, white light enveloped her. Bruce thought for a moment that he was having a vision brought on by fatigue. The light was so brilliant. He eased the car onto a gentle, grassy embankment near where she stood, then turned off the engine. He sat there for a moment before opening the door, feeling that time had slowed down, that he moved in molasses. At last, he managed to get out of the car. When he walked toward Tashamiroku, he saw her as if for the first time. She wore a strange garment, long, neutral of color, appearing made from a type of linen. A simple, square black pouch that hung from a wide shoulder strap was at her side. She seemed to have stepped out of another era. Her hair, dark as a starless night, was coiled behind her head. Her pale, unsmiling face was devoid of any trace of cosmetics. Shami moved to meet him.
"I feel like we're at the end of the world."
Bruce hadn't a clue where the words came from. They were not what he'd have chosen as his greeting. Shami stopped to take in what he said. Her eyes became huge.
"The end of... Is this what brought you here? You think the world is ending?"
"Oh, Shami, no. You brought me here. I was worried about your sudden departure."
Their exchange regrounded him. Bruce stepped toward her and gave her a gentle hug, to which Shami responded.
"What I meant, this place is so apart from everything of the world I know. Levant is like that, but here much more so."
"Ah, yes, I know. Often in my heart I longed to return. Not for good, just like coming home for a visit. But I did not want to cause hurt for mother and father, nor did I wish to be a financial burden with air flights so expensive."
"Then you got my message?"
"Yes. The monk who acts as master's secretary took the day's messages and passed on those for the nunnery. They let me know last night. I felt a little anxious about your sudden arrival, so I wanted to walk out to greet you. Have you had lunch?"
"No, nothing, since a little smoked fish and rice quite early. I wasn't hungry for much. Couldn't sleep well."
"Neither could I. Would you care to drive to a little village called Misuzu? There is a small tea shop where they have oden, a Nikoni stew, standing warm all day."
"You direct. I'll drive."
Bruce and Shami took their trays outdoors to a table beneath a thatched overhang where they could see the ocean far off. Bruce hadn't thought much of the tea shop's appearance, but his respect was won as soon as he caught the aroma drifting toward him. Its source was a large brass fire pot that simmered courtesy of a hollow funnel in the center that held a grate of live coals. This and two large tea kettles on the corner hearth were the focal points of an otherwise rustic one-room shop.
"Suddenly, I'm quite hungry," Bruce remarked with a chuckle. "It must be these steaming bowls right under my nose, and the quality of this air, and being here with you."
Shami smiled as she took her seat and poured tea into each cup.
"Thank you. Shami, the folks have had difficulty with your sudden changes of plans, and your coming here, especially Rose."
He took his first taste of the savory broth.
"Yes, I have felt this, although Mother has not spoken to me from her heart, so as not to cause difficulty."
"Why did you choose to rearrange everyone else's plans so abruptly and return to Nikai?"
"It is fair for you to ask this of me."
Shami took a sip of tea and then continued.
"I believe it is also fair for me to ask, before I give an answer, why you have also dropped everything and come here after me."
"I could give you a simple answer, yet it's not so simple, the answer. Shami, I believe there's so much behind our actions for each of us. As for myself, there is a connection with you stronger than I'd have guessed. Up until Clifford told me you had left, that is. And when he told me that, I had no doubt. I think this connection is made up of a cumulative energy force. The current running through Sapphire, through the friendship between our two families, and through you. I can't even find words for it all. I've come face to face with the wordless treasure you have become to me."
He watched her eyes fill with tears. She put down her chopsticks. At last, with a sigh that helped release her voice, she said,
"You have stunned me, Bruce. You see?
Yes, you are correct. Much is behind my actions that I have not expressed. This is because what brought me here with a sense of urgency is so impractical. Now, I will tell you." She wiped the back of her hand across her eyes, then took up her chopsticks and had a bite of food first. Bruce ate too and gave her time.
"Through my last 2 years of school, I have grown more and more oppressed by what I see throughout most all of Zamora. The greed, warfare, vying for power, the increasing frequency of catastrophes coming from these negative forces is continuously discussed in school and at home, especially with Enrico embroiled in warfare abroad now. Spiritual practice helps with this, and I have also developed a personal interest in prophecies about our times, especially from seers of long ago. When time came to choose my senior project, I decided to compile an analysis of these predictions under the title, Prophecies and Their Relationship to Zamora's Future."
"An ambitious undertaking."
"Yes. Once I realized how extensive it could grow, the greatest difficulty was in limiting the information so that I could, how would you say, arrive at some conclusions to validate the project. One feature of the dissertation, which gained my teacher's interest, was an analysis of factors in the lives of these visionaries. Their biographical profiles were as valuable as their prophecies. This is how I developed a passion about one prophet who stood out from all the rest. You have heard of him. There are few who have not. His name was Stare.
Oh, yes. I don't profess to know a lot about him, but his works were voluminous, weren't they?
More so than any other prophet. I will not go into a lot of detail about his life here, but I will share this with you. First, let me finish this delicious Odin.
Please do.
Bruce sat watching her, and soon he turned in his seat to survey the houses and shops scattered about, to gaze at the ribbon of light at the sea's horizon.
You have aroused a great curiosity in me, I must say. I could have a little more. Let me bring back another helping for you as well.
Oh, only one scoop. Thank you, Bruce. He returned with both bowls on his tray. Shami had gone to admire the owner's small rock garden. When she saw Bruce set the bowls in place, she came back to their table and settled into her seat.
Well, I could have included much more information. There just wasn't enough time.
After the paper had been turned in and graded, I needed to return to the library a comprehensive volume containing Stare's prophecies. Before doing that, I discovered I had overlooked a section of the book while concentrating on parts directly relevant to my paper, so I spent a couple of nights staying up late to read it. There was a small section, almost like an academic afterthought, about Stare's prediction of a time he called the 12th Age of Zamora. Mysterious disappearances would become numerous at the onset of this period. It may not have seemed like much to the editor who compiled his writings. But for me, it joined with other facts and speculations I had uncovered about Stare to just take me over. I tried to put it all aside and found it would not go away. Shami stopped and began to partake of the aromatic stew. Bruce sat quietly to hear more, having finished his own.
You know that I have wondered about Sapphire's disappearance ever since coming to Enrico. When I first learned about details of Stare's life, including speculation that he himself also disappeared without a trace, I was fascinated, then to find the prophecy.
So, you think Stare's prophecy may have some relationship to what happened to Sapphire?
I am uncertain about that. I think that Stare was referring more to mass disappearances. It is hard to say.
Shami finished the last of the vegetables and tipped her bowl for the remaining broth. She placed her napkin beside the empty bowl and sighed.
This is all quite sketchy, how I am telling this to you. And this will be also this last part. You may know all about the Dwarnstile prophecy, which we can explore further, and how the earthquake did indeed take place, leaving unsubmerged only a barren, rocky outcropping at the north end of Dwarnstile, now called Sharu. Strong fortifications had been built there, but of course it was all abandoned long ago and has now fallen into ruin. This is the thing. There are legends about the fortification there and about Stare's vanishing into nowhere. These stories are found in various places, yet hardly given any credence in academic works. They say that when members of Dwarnstile's household attempted to track down the prophet,
they discovered a tunnel system adjacent to the chamber where he stayed. Superstitious, they shunned these tunnels but refused to seal them off because no one knew for certain if one day Stair might return. Bruce, I have not been able to put any of this to rest. That is why I am here.
Bruce leaned forward for her next words.
Busho is the nearest port where one can hire a boat for passage to Sharu.